Hey there.
Hi there.
We are here to do part two of this episode on this very, very fascinating episode of Hannibal.
And of course, the show is A Second Helping of Hannibal, a spoiler-full podcast. And I am Matt.
And I'm Beth.
All right. So this was a good rewatch.
I agree.
I'd really like to do a Godfather saga cut of the first few episodes of this season and rearrange them in chronological order and just see if that works. I don't know why I want to do that. The Godfather saga cut is useful, but not necessary.
It's not necessary and it's inferior
to the two separate movies.
Yes.
Have you watched the Godfather saga cut more than once all the way through?
Probably not more than once.
Have you watched Godfather 1 and 2 more than once?
Many times more than once.
I couldn't get that question out with a straight face. Yeah, I think so. Maybe I should just leave it then. But I do think it would be kind of fun to watch them in order.
Well, I think you would have a fun, that would be a fun project for you.
I went down one rabbit hole, but I think I'll just do it when we get to the scene that the rabbit hole deals with.
Okay.
Unless you think I should just go down the rabbit hole now.
Which scene is it related to?
It's related to when Alana says she's always been interested in the word defenestration.
Well, why don't you just jump into that and then we could move on.
Okay. It might actually provide some context for the show. So there's this scene, obviously, where Chilton goes and visits Alana in the hospital. And she says something to the effect of, I've always liked the word defenestration, but now I get to use it in conversation.
In casual conversation.
Yeah, which is just such a strange thing to say about the word defenestration. But then I started thinking, if you actually were interested in the word defenestration and started poking at it, what would it reveal? So putting myself in Alana's head, I started researching the word defenestration. And it's, like anything, an interesting topic when you start to dig into it. If you have a lot of time to hang out in a hospital bed and do research, certainly you could get some interesting things about defenestration. So I'm going to discuss it then. So the definition of defenestrate is literally to throw someone out a window. Though in modern usage, it can be used to describe the removal of someone from power. So it has those dual definitions, literally throwing someone out a window, but you can also say that a politician has been defenestrated by being voted out of office or impeached or something like that. I think it's just jumped out at me in this context because it's a pretty aggressive word and it's kind of tailor-made for Hannibal because it sounds almost like a medical term. To my ear, it does anyway. And I think it's because it reminds me a bit of the word debriding.
Mm-hmm.
And debriding refers to removing damaged tissue from a wound. But it also gets used to describe the process of cleaning dead tissue off bones. Now, these are only my associations I'm making in this context. Obviously, I don't think it's meant to refer to the word debriding. Did you know that people who are into skeletons for whatever reason use maggots to clean the skeletons to do debriding of the flesh of skeletons? You did know that.
Yes.
And naturalists and museum curators who do this use these beetles called dermastid beetles to clean skeletons. And this is a totally normal and frequently employed practice at museums.
Yes.
You knew all about this.
Yes. This I know from, you know, work-related things.
Oh, yeah. So you knew from work-related things that these animals debride corpses, but that it's used deliberately to clean bones and skulls and things like that.
Yes.
I knew about it because I'm just a nerd, but it's an interesting thing. Anyway, okay, so we're not talking about debriding, though. So anyway, it turns out that there's a good reason why this word for throwing someone out a window also gets used to describe political removal beyond the obvious metaphor of falling. And that's because historically, defenestration was actually used for political assassination or as a form of public punishment for political agitators.
Got it.
So have you heard of the defenestration of Prague?
No.
Okay. So if you were a student of history or a student of early modern history, you'd really know about the defenestration of Prague. You know, do you know about the 30 Years' War? You know the term the 30 Years' War, right?
Yes.
But you probably don't really know what the 30 Years' War was about.
If I did, I don't remember.
Right. So basically, the defenestration of Prague was an expression of the growing antipathy between Bohemian Protestants and the dominant Catholic Habsburg Empire, which is what the 30 Years' War was about.
Okay.
And so the defenestration of Prague, during a hearing where some Protestant lords were airing their grievances about being stripped from power, they threw two Catholic lords regent out the window of a chancellery. And this happened in 1618. And this is what triggered the first battle of the 30 Years' War, which was this big Catholic-Protestant war between the Bohemian Protestants and the Habsburgs. And the weird thing is the two people who got thrown out the window survived, and the Catholics maintained that the Virgin Mary intervened to save them. And the Protestants said they survived because they fell into a pile of shit, dung. But it's probably actually because the wall of the castle sloped outward and slowed their fall. So these competing assertions of why they survived may have been rooted in this longstanding idea that if you were holy or pious enough, you would be saved from a fall. And if you did fall to your death, it meant that you spiritually deserved it. So it was almost like whether witches would float or not, could you fall to your death or not? And in general, falling is a metaphor for falling from grace, starting with Satan, right, is the first fallen angel. So there's that. So most of this information I'm getting is coming from this article I came across online in the Journal of Modern History by this NYU professor, Daniel Jute. And it's this great academic article. It's wonderfully academic in all the best ways because it really digs into theories about things you wouldn't think about, like the role of windows in early modern Europe, you know, specifically that windows were important symbols of status. Ornate, soaring, well-placed windows with painterly views was not something everyone could come by. And there was this whole kind of status and wealth and prestige associated with having these beautifully placed windows. And from the outside, windows were important for politicians and nobility to display their status. So if they had a window overlooking a public square, they could literally look down on the masses, almost like a religious figure. And if they wanted to advertise their largesse or curry favor, they could